David Rosenstock, Director of Investments and Financial Planning at Wharton Wealth Planning, is here. We're talking funds and ETFs, and this is the Market Call. Welcome to the Money Life Market Call, the part of the show where we talk with experienced money managers about how they do their job, what they look for that determines their buys and sells, what they see happening broadly on the market, and how they are putting it all together. And we know you like to hear from new guests that you haven't gotten their opinions before. That's what's happening today, as making his maiden voyage on the Market Call is David Rosenstock. He is Director of Investments and Financial Planning at Wharton Wealth Planning. And if you'd like to learn more about David and the firm, you're going to go to whartonwealthplanning.com, just like it sounds. David Rosenstock, thanks for joining me on Money Life.
Thanks for the invitation to be on today's podcast, John.
We always start with methodology, and we're not familiar with yours. So help us understand what goes into making an ETF or a fund something you want to invest in, and what goes into the things that you leave for everybody else.
There's sort of four investment principles that we like to follow in general when selecting investments and putting together portfolios. The first is simple wins. So we really like transparency in the companies we're investing in. Large public companies, strict reporting standards are things that we definitely look favorably upon. We believe intelligent risk-taking is rewarded over the long run with superior risk-adjusted returns. And we also believe that costs matter, so we want to minimize the costs that we're paying for ETFs and mutual funds that we're selecting, because we could pass those directly on to the client, and that improves returns. Broadly speaking, like to look at both value and growth stocks and really have a good mix between those two categories. So we want to build low-cost, tax-efficient portfolios from there. And think having the right balance between those two categories is really critical. In the fixed income category, we'll evaluate interest rate environment for different opportunities. So that's really the first investment principle. And then second, we like to take a really systematic long-term approach. We think long-term returns are the most important. However, as we all know, everybody has to endure the short term to get there. So we're not actively trading, trying to pick necessarily what's going to be the hottest or has the most short-term potential. We think in the long run, asset allocation and diversification are going to be the main drivers of performance. And that's really backed by time-tested, academically validated principles and financial science. So in the investments we're looking for, we definitely want to see that sort of philosophy. We want to keep turnover as low as possible and use a really balanced approach to manage volatility when we're doing that. Our third investment sort of principle that we're looking for is we really want to make sure that investments and portfolios are customized to the individual's risk profile and goals. I actually think the biggest risk when investing, it's not market risk or what's happening in the economy. I think the biggest risk is that the portfolio is not properly aligned with the owner's goals and their needs. And I think you could avoid really big costly mistakes by selecting the right types of investments, the right type of risk for your portfolio. So looking at risk profile and time horizon, when you're going to need, how long of a period you have to invest. And those are all sort of important things, I think. And the last and final, the fourth area that we look at is tax efficiency. I think one of the surest ways to improve returns over the long run is to control tax liabilities. This is actually possible to do to some degree. So we regularly use tax advantage investments such as exchange traded funds and municipal bonds and municipal bond funds. We also focus on making sure we're putting the right types of investments in the best types of accounts. So there's different types of accounts, as we all know, retirement accounts, some are tax free, some are tax deferred. Obviously, there's taxable accounts, and you could actually improve your long-term returns by making sure you're putting the right investments that you're choosing in the correct accounts. And so weighing current and future tax considerations and focusing on long-term tax minimization is a great way to sort of improve those long-term returns as well.
I like that. I like hearing about asset location and not just asset allocation, and that's what comes down to tax efficiency. But I want to ask a follow-up question that gets into something that I heard there, because you talked about how on the fixed income side, you will look to be tactical. And obviously, we're at a rate change environment. But you also talked about wanting to be tax efficient and wanting to keep turnover low. So you got one thing that could drive you to make changes and one thing that could drive you to make fewer changes and one thing that could overarch and be the governor on how much changes are you making. So what are you doing as we've now gotten to a rate cut environment? What's your outlook for how much movement, if any, you will do on fixed income portfolios as you watch the rate change occur?
Yeah, it's a great question. So over time, you know, we have this systematic long-term approach, as I mentioned, that we follow. So what we do is rebalancing. So our process periodically guides us to reduce risk exposure to overvalued asset classes and preserve an optimum ratio between asset classes for an individual's particular circumstances. So, you know, this is called rebalancing, and we do it, we try to do it tax efficiently across all investment accounts. Obviously, as you're making certain changes in retirement accounts, that's often not going to have taxable consequences. And so we think rebalancing sort of helps remove emotion from the process. With respect to fixed income, we definitely have seen, you know, having had inflation hit a 40-year high not too long ago, that drove up interest rates a good amount, and that's created a really great opportunity for people that want that fixed income part of their portfolio to receive both a pretty attractive interest rate plus appreciation as well, as we believe interest rates will be on the decline a good amount over the next year. We think the market is anticipating about a 25 basis cut at each of the next six meetings. So we think there's definitely some favorable opportunities there. We tend to like bonds that are sort of in the 2-year to 10-year part of the curve. As interest rates change, you know, there's different opportunities that present themselves. But we're always have an eye on doing it tax efficiently. And yeah, so there's plenty of opportunities between those tax advantage bonds, the municipals, as well as corporates. You know, we look at everything from corporates to governments. We look at asset-backed bonds and mortgage-backed bonds and try to pick where we think is the best spot.
On the equity side right now, what are the areas of the market that look particularly good? And obviously, you're looking at using that same kind of rebalancing strategy, but what would you be thinking you're rebalancing towards and away from?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we definitely like dividend paying stocks and dividend growth stocks. You know, stocks that are consistently growing their dividends, I think, are particularly interesting. Companies that pay high dividends, you know, sometimes they're not in the best financial health, and sometimes they could be using debt financing just to keep their dividends high. And so I think a great measure of health is if the company is growing its dividends, then you could see sort of there's a lot of strength under the hood over time. And so that's a good thing. That's something that we like to look for. We think dividend stocks are a big beneficiary from declining interest rates. So as interest rates decline, the dividend yields become comparatively more attractive. And I think that's definitely, we've been seeing that over the last month or so. And I think that that trend will probably continue. Lower interest rates generally lead to improved valuations for dividend stocks, and they could also reduce the company's borrowing costs as well, which is always a good thing. So in this sector of dividend paying stocks, utilities and consumer staples, real estate investment trusts, communication services and financials are some of the more popular and attractive ones. But, you know, in the dividend growth area, you know, there's also a lot of great technology companies that are growing their dividends. And so I think capturing some of those as well is an important, you know, could be an important part of a strategy.
And let's jump in and get brass tacks on this. What is a name or two that you're using to help us understand what kinds of funds you want to use to capture those spaces? What's a poster child for your methodology in some of those areas?
Yeah. So, you know, WisdomTree has a really good fund called U.S. Quality Dividend Growth, ticker is DGRW. Vanguard has something called the Vanguard High Dividend Yield Index Fund, ticker is VYM. And so one of those focuses on the dividend growth, and one of them focuses on just higher dividend payers in general. And I think I like those two. And I would add, I think sometimes when you're looking at ETFs, for example, that are picking these dividend stocks, some of them will also look at companies that are doing share buybacks. So a share buyback is sort of an alternative use that a company can use its cash. It could pay dividends or it could buy back its shares. And, you know, they're essentially very similar in terms of technically the way they mathematically benefit a shareholder. But I think the companies that buy back their shares, by investing in a strategy that is focused on that, you're not just limiting yourself to the companies. You're not excluding that category, because companies that are buying back a lot of their stock year after year, they tend to have the cash flow to do it. And so that's a great sign and a great type of company that you want to consider investing in addition to those companies that are growing their dividends and just maintaining really healthy dividend payouts as the interest rate environment is on the decline.
Well, now we're going to get your quick and dirty take on some funds my audience is particularly interested in.
Quick and dirty.
Fun will now commence.
Well, we've actually been having fun already, but now we're going to ratchet up the fun because it's the lightning round here. Quick and dirty, we call it, and we're doing it today with David Rosenstrock. He is Director of Investments and Financial Planning at Wharton Wealth Planning, whartonwealthplanning.com. If you're looking for more information, you know how quick and dirty works. Send us your ticker requests if you've got them, but we're going to jump straight in. And today we're going to start with a request we got from Tracy in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, who wants to know about the Vanguard Real Estate Fund. That's VNQ.
Yeah, so VNQ, I think in general, real estate investment trusts have a favorable backdrop right now as interest rates are on the decline. Interest rates dictate the financing costs for real estate trusts. And so interest rates are a key driver for real estate values and returns. So as lower interest rates reduce borrowing costs for real estate investment trusts, this enables them to finance acquisitions more cheaply. And that's very supportive of asset values. In addition, I think real estate investment trusts are generally pretty attractively valued right now because they're trading at a pretty large earnings multiple discount to where they historically have been, and so that is always a good thing to look at when you're making a decision. And then third, I think in general, publicly traded real estate investment trusts tend to be well positioned to go on the offense when interest rates or the cost of their financing is on the decline, and that's what's happening right now. And so as real estate investment and trusts use financing, less expensive financing, to buy more and become net acquirers of properties in this interest rate cycle, that could potentially benefit them. So I think there's a lot there. There are some caveats. I think, you know, the office space, you know, we've all heard based on the pandemic, just a lot less people going into the office. So there are some sectors of the real estate investment trust market, which I think are a little bit more concerning than others. But in general, it's an interesting area of opportunity right now.
VNQ, interesting area of opportunity.
What is this obsession with real estate?
Well, that would be a buy. Our next request comes from Dan in Williston, Vermont. He wants to know about Vanguard Small Cap Value. That's VBR.
Vanguard Small Cap Value is sort of a speculative buy. Approximately 30% of small cap companies have their financing in floating rate loans. So as interest rates go down, they're going to benefit a lot from that. Also, I think the valuation gaps are pretty large between the large and the small caps right now. And so based on those two factors, I think it's a speculative buy and definitely has some good upside, but in a recessionary environment, some downside as well.
Buyer beware, dude.
So you have to understand that you're buying at warts and all, a speculative buy on VBR, Vanguard Small Cap Value. Our next request comes from Tony in Las Vegas. He wants to know about WFQRX. That's the Wells Fargo Advantage DJ Target 2035 fund.
For target date funds in general, I don't really love them. You know, a lot of times you really want to understand what the exact time period is. So when you're targeting a certain time for retirement, your life doesn't end at retirement. Obviously, there could be decades to go. Some of these funds, I feel they can get too conservative once you hit that retirement marker, in this case, 2035. And then also, I think you really want to understand what exactly is in the fund. And I think target date funds sort of mix in a lot of things that I might not otherwise put in there. And they could sometimes have higher expense ratios. So for those reasons, you know, I'm not particularly inclined to recommend it.
Whoa, dumber than advertised.
Yeah, target date funds in general did not score well there, but specifically WFQRX, the Wells Fargo Advantage DJ Target 2035 fund, that was an avoid. Our last two requests today come from Richard in Chula Vista, California. The first is for the IDLV. That's the Invesco S&P International Developed Low Volatility ETF.
You know, in general, I think U.S. equities offer a better way to gain exposure to the international markets while minimizing certain risks. And so in general, I don't give a lot of weighting to international related investments. I think you could derive a lot of benefit from international growth, like large cap companies in the U.S. derive 35% of their revenues from overseas. So you could benefit from overseas growth and I think take sort of less risk. For that reason, in general, I wouldn't really be a huge buyer of international right now, as I think there's just better risk-adjusted ways to sort of play that area.
There's no place like home.
Yeah, there's no place investing like home. That's what you're hearing. And of course, you can get the international exposure by buying U.S. multinationals, which is why IDLV, the Invesco S&P International Developed Low Volatility ETF, is a sell or an avoid. And Richard's other request, Granite Shares Gold Trust, its ticker BAR.
In general, you know, gold is something people ask about a lot. And I don't recommend gold as an investment. I think over long periods of time, gold has proven itself to underperform other asset classes, such as stocks and bonds, as we've been speaking about. You know, a few percent difference in annualized returns might not sound like a lot, but it makes a very large difference over the long term when you're compounding. So in general, gold is defensive, and I know why people like it. I think it's a good store of value, but in general, I would prefer high interest rate cash-related fixed income investments and other sort of safe havens as opposed to gold, because I think it'll do better over the long term.
Why not put some of that money to work for you with the high yield only investing in gold and silver can bring?
Well, you just heard why not, and that's why the Granite Shares Gold Trust, ticker BAR, that was a sell or an avoid, because when it comes down to it...
Yes, sir. Can't argue with cash.
You can't argue with cash, so find the ways to get your income using your cash and putting it to work in high interest vehicles. David, we've come to the end of our time. Appreciate you taking the time to join me. Thanks so much. I hope we get a chance to talk again down the line.
Thanks again. Great being a guest today.
That's David Rosenstrock. He's Director of Investments and Financial Planning at Wharton Wealth Planning. Wharton, just like you'd expect Wharton to be sound, spelled whartonwealthplanning.com for more information. And we'll come back and let you know what's happening for the rest of this week on Money Life. So stick with us all the way to the end, which is in sight right after this brief break.